It's Saturday morning, and Mom is mixing up some biscuits. Now, attending her is 13-month-old baby Little, and he's watching Mom's every move. He's already put together her actions with the marvelous smells that come later, and so he watches and learns. He already knows what he wants, and all systems are go. Little can move pretty fast, and he takes off for the stove, but his mom catches him with a quick movement and backs him up a yard or two. Setting him down, she tells him in no uncertain terms, "Don't touch that stove. It's hot, and it'll burn you if you touch it." Little sits back and shows Mom his, "I'm just going to sit this one out, Ma. Look." Mom steps over to the fridge to get some preserves for the biscuits. And in that moment, Little makes a beeline move faster than a fella his size should be able to, because he knows where biscuits come from. And he reaches, shoots, scores, whereupon yelling, weeping, and wailing ensues. Now, here we have the basis to the answer of the universal question, why do bad things happen to good people? Let's take a look at a similar fellow, about 20 years down the line. Now, I can only tell you this tale because you're currently in no position to turn to the person sitting next to you and tell them what happens, because some of you have heard this before. And once you figure out where you've heard this story, you'll know that it's a true story. A young man comes to town, the new town, it's where he's going to settle down, and stops for a fill-up at a neighborhood station. He notices these tickets when he goes to prepay for lottery scratchers. There was no fancy electronic machine back then, just these scratch-off tickets, which he'd never played before. So to see what the hubbub is all about, all these winnings he's heard of, he bought a $1 ticket, ready to change his fortune. Scratches the ticket, and as I'm sure you've already guessed, sadly, he only wins $2. Now the young fella is really peeved at this. This whole thing's a scam, it's a sham. $2, what a jip. But he decides to give it another chance and invest one of the $2 to try it again. Now this time, it manages to squeak by with a fiver. He pays for the gas and pockets his disappointment. That young man never won a single penny for the next decade and a half. Didn't play that often, but when he did, he felt the same peevishness from each moment he decided to try it again to the moment he walked out with another losing printout. One day, after much study with people much wiser than himself, he rather suddenly realizes how unusual it is to win the first time you play. Twice in a row and walk away 500% up. How did a 500% increase move from a bother to a blessing in his eyes? Because the experience of losing for 15 years somehow convinced him that such a leg up, like a 500% increase, might just be a sufficient lever. Didn't like the years of loss. It felt, well, bad. Reassessed the win. Felt much better by comparison. Now he's acquainted with the distinction. With the burned fingers, Little would have no way of reassessing his relationship with the stove. It's so simple. We miss it over and over again in daily life, even unto our ripe ages. How often do we repeat useless, or worse still, painful processes that we don't want, processes that don't work for us, yet we do them again and again? So here's something I've learned from dozens and dozens of clients that I've worked with. In the instant that you collide with what you don't want, you are given a wisp of a gift. Now, right now, most of us can think of several things we don't want in this year of 2020. And the answer to that peevishness will come into crystalline clarity for us. You will see. Sometime in the future, of course. The instant you know what you don't want, you will see, hear, feel, whatever works for you, a fleeting moment of what you actually do seek. That view won't last long. And even less so, because we have the commonly held habit of focusing on the first experience, the what we don't want, to the loss of the point of it all. That's the secret. But knowing that alone doesn't tell you how to get it right, how to restore to memory that fleeting moment of clarity. Now, here's something my martial teachers knew. The sword that is leveled at you is not the point. It has a point, but it's not the point. This is a secret teaching among the world's best fighters. If you focus on the blade, you have been mesmerized. It has caught you, and it will then take you. The will to live is on the other side of the moment of the edge of that blade. That is what you would do well to want, to reach for. It is one more example of the meaning of keep your eyes on the prize, not the problem. It's not that you don't want to know or need to know something about the problem, but the more attention you give it, and we know the rest of this, the bigger it will grow and the more it will take over. Keep your eyes on the prize. Okay, I don't do this often, but this is a good day and it's a good day to live. What about Trump? Most often when I talk to, let's say, a Democrat or a progressive, a lefty, etc., wobblies in some of your cases, they usually talk to me about strategies and tactics. They often speak of keeping the House and capturing the Senate, or they speak of the failed impeachment, or about the gutting of everything from our Constitution to our coffers. These are all the steps to what? Trump is an excellent example of the hypnotic quality of the shine on the cutting edge of a weapon. We find it difficult to take our eyes off it, and hence it leads us where it wants us. This is a very tough moment to grasp the nature of giving your power away. What do you want on the other side of this? Who would you be if we could, who would we be, let's say, if we could be anything, anything at all in our wildest dreams? No matter how crazy it seems, what would we make if all that was problem to us disappeared? Now, when you really hear this question, your life will change in that moment. I am qualified to tell you that. I am not qualified to tell you, each of you, the answer to the question. You have to qualify that. But that is where our attention needs to be. I'll give it to you another way. When you see a martial artist breaking boards, what they're doing is they're actually just reaching for the other side of the boards. They're not getting into a fight with the boards. If you get into a fight with the boards, it hurts. The boards win. But if you reach through to that where you're trying to go, where you actually want to be, the boards are hardly a problem anymore. And this is not just the case in a television trick or showmanship piece. It is, in fact, true of life. If you know what it is you want to create on the other side and you're focused on that, that is what you will get. If you're focused on the battle, and I'm not meaning to say you can't, you need to not pay attention. You have to be present in the moment of the battle. But you also have to be drawn toward what it is you're working for. And sometimes I think that's something we forget in the joy of the battle and the struggle. Thank you.